British Sky Broadcasting, in association with Paramount Vantage, presents A Mighty Heart, directed by Michael Winterbottom and starring Dan Futterman as Danny Pearl and Angelina Jolie as his wife Marianne, whose book forms the basis for this true story.
The day after 9/11, Danny and I flew to Pakistan. He was the South Asia Bureau Chief for the Wall Street Journal, and I was working for French Public Radio. Thousands of journalists from all over the world arrived in Islamabad to cover the war in neighboring Afghanistan. On the 7th October, the bombing began.
American fighter bombers streak off from an aircraft carrier. A ball of fire surges up from a building. Clouds of grey smoke rise like giant mushrooms. Dead bodies litter the ground. A multi-rocket launcher fires across an earth in flames.
The forces of the Taliban government were rapidly overwhelmed.
Vehicles packed with soldiers move along a dusty road.
And with the end of the war, many journalists moved on. Danny and I stayed, reporting on nuclear weapons, Al-Qaeda, secret jihadi training camps, and the million refugees living in Peshawar, the birthplace of the Taliban.
Crowds jostle in a crowded street.
As the hunt for bin Laden continued in the mountains of Tora Bora, many fighters slipped back across the border into Pakistan, looking for a safe place to regroup. And many people in Pakistan saw America as the enemy and the Taliban as their Muslim brothers.
Men with placards jeer. The American flag is burnt.
By the end of January, I was 5 months pregnant, and we were ready to go. But there was one more interview that Danny wanted. We flew to Karachi, one of the largest cities in the world, the main port of entry to and departure from Pakistan. A vast, sprawling, chaotic city where there are so many people, nobody knows how to count them. How do you find one man amongst all this?
Mighty Heart also stars Irfan Khan, Dennis O'Hare, and Archie Panjabi. The audio description is by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS agency. The music is by Molly Nyman and Harry Escott. The streets of Karachi are teeming with people, on foot, on bicycles, motorbikes, in cars, vans and buses. A bird of prey glides gracefully over one of the crowded streets towards a more prosperous looking suburb, where a car travels along a tree-lined road. In the back seat is Danny Pearl, a slightly balding, bespectacled man in his late 30s. The car stops outside a substantial house with tall metal grill gates. He gets out. It's the 23rd of January, 02. A guard opens the gate.
Salam.
Salam alaikum.
Hey.
Hi, how's it going?
Yeah, it's okay. Where's Marianne?
She's in bed, I think.
You know where the headquarters of Cybernet is?
Cybernet, yeah, why?
You know Richard Reed?
Yeah.
He sent an email to his handler here. It's a Cybernet address.
You want to go there?
Yeah.
Danny goes into the bedroom.
Hey. How you feeling?
Huge. Pregnant.
I stink.
I'm sure you stink. Make a lot of stink. This time tomorrow, we're in an air-conditioned hotel in Dubai. How's my little embryo?
Good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Danny joins his pregnant wife on the bed and kisses her bump.
Sacred.
I have a name for him.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Adam.
Adam.
Assalamu alaikum, aap kaise hai? Acha, ek minute, huh? Sheridan haven't got any cars today.
Really?
Acha, theek hai, huh? Okay, good office.
I need one as well.
If it's not a problem, I'll get Shabir to get you guys a taxi.
Okay. As long as it doesn't take too long, I just can't be late.
Acha, Shabir, do a taxi layout, okay?
Madam, thank you.
The Sadar.
Shabir guides two taxis to the house.
Thank you.
No problem.
All right, I gotta roll. I'll call you. Leave your phone on.
Okay.
Danny leaves in one of the cabs. Marianne gets into the other.
I'll see you at the supermarket.
In Urdu to the driver, take care of her. In Danny's cab.
You have a boy?
I have a daughter, one, sir.
How old?
Maybe 8.5 months. Daughter, good. No problem, life. Boy, too much problem, life.
Yeah.
An office.
Danny. Helene Yusuf.
Danny Perron.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too.
Please, come through. Would you get some tea?
I want to ask your advice about something.
I'm supposed to meet tonight with Sheikh Jalani.
Where are you supposed to meet him?
At the village restaurant.
Provided you meet him in a public place, you should be all right. And just be careful.
Okay, I will.
Good.
Marianne's taxi driver is weaving his way through the busy traffic. He drops her off at the offices of a human rights lawyer she's arranged to interview. She sits at his desk making notes, her curly raven hair combed back.
It's not just religious fundamentalism that we're fighting. It's a combination of tribalism, retrogressive cultural values, and a totally decayed criminal justice system.
So what is your focus, your solution?
Danny is back in his taxi.
Tonight you go,
tomorrow.
Huh?
Yeah, away.
Why, my friend?
You know Dubai?
I know, sir, Dubai.
Have you been there?
No. Only Karachi.
The taxi driver waits while Danny's in another office.
So I'm trying to find someone who's using Cybernet as his ISP. I have the email account name, and I was wondering if you'd be able to give me the IP number or the name of the account holder.
It is possible, but I guess everything here is very confidential, and we are not supposed to leak any sort of information to anybody.
Back in her cab, Marianne is on her cell phone.
Asra. Yeah, I'll be there in 10 minutes.
Danny talks by mobile to his fixer.
Masood.
Danny, how are you? Is everything okay?
Yeah, no, I'm all right. I'm on my way now.
Okay, is Maryam going with you?
No, she's not. She's going to stay home. No, that's good. What, is there a problem?
No, there's no problem. As long as you meet in public, there shouldn't be a problem.
All right. I mean, it's what everybody tells me.
Yeah, because that's true. Good luck for the meeting.
Yeah, thanks.
Sitting in the back of the taxi, Danny removes his earpiece. His white-bearded driver negotiates the heavy traffic as the sun starts to set amidst dark clouds in the sky. Danny makes a phone call.
Hey, baby. Hey, where are you?
I'm at the supermarket.
What are you cooking?
Picadillo.
Oh, yeah?
Mm.
Excellent.
How are you? How was your day?
It was all right. They didn't tell me much.
So what time you be back?
I'm hoping 9:00. I mean, I'm like sitting in a parking lot right now, but hopefully we'll get moving. And I'm still hoping 9:00. Listen, I love you.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Marianne flicks off her mobile as she stands in the vegetable aisle of the supermarket. With headlights on, Danny's cab continues across the city. In the back seat, Danny puts a hand to his mouth, looking tense. A silver ring is on his wedding finger. They arrive at the village restaurant.
Pakistani and Indian troops are still massing on the disputed Kashmir border, despite President
Asra. How much time do I have?
It's okay, we've got time. Don't worry.
At Asra's house, they prepare for the dinner party. Danny's cab driver waits outside the village restaurant. He watches Danny through the window. Back at the house.
Alia.
Alia.
Danny is waiting outside the restaurant for his contact. At the house, Marianne and Asra are still preparing food, helped by the house staff. Now Danny is being driven in a small grey car along a nighttime street. At the house, Marianne, wearing a pinny over a low-cut black dress, gives him a call.
The number you have dialed is not responding at the moment. Please try later.
Danny stares from the car window, looking unsettled. At the house, the housekeeper's little girl chews on a biscuit. Danny to the driver.
Excuse me, how far are we going?
There's no response. At the house, Asra and Marianne exchange smiles.
Good.
In the car, Danny's bearded driver wears a stony face as he continues through the teeming streets. To the left of him, a man tumbles into the road and is ignored. At the house, a car pulls through the gates, which are then shut by the guard. A sleek Pakistani woman gets out, holding flowers. A man escorts her into the dinner.
Just helping.
What is it that you're doing?
It's a cabin crew job for Qatar Airways.
It's the toughest job in the world.
It is.
I know.
Waking up at 4 in the morning.
How much are they paying you?
I love the way she says Urdu.
Yeah, well, at least I can say water as opposed to water.
Okay, who says water?
No one says water. We all say water.
Yeah, my little red
dish. This is really good, yeah.
It's really nice. It's a Cuban dish.
Cuban?
Cuban.
Oh, yeah, is that where you're from?
No, my mother is Cuban. I'm from Paris.
Where's the CIA agent, man?
Oh. How do you mean?
All the American journalists are CIA agent, aren't they?
Sure, I mean, I work for the Wall Street Journal, so does that make me a CIA agent?
What do the Americans really know about Pakistan, no? I mean, what do they know about Afghanistan? Apart from, you know, bombing it all the time.
That's why I'm a journalist, to let people know.
That's a romantic idea of journalism, yeah?
I don't think
read
so.
The papers here, you'll be definitely more cynical.
Come on.
Marianne goes to the kitchen and makes another unsuccessful call.
Oh, that's how you guys say it, right?
Hot.
Really? Whatever you say.
Good afternoon.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
See you soon.
Just as long as your dad, right?
The guests leave. Asra's boyfriend stays.
I still can't get through to Danny.
Well, maybe they took him to a madrasa out of town. You know, you don't
He would call me. I'm going to check his computer.
Okay. Maybe his battery's low or something.
The boyfriend, Asfar, lights a joint as Marianne leaves the room to check her husband's computer.
Dear Mr. Pearl, thank you very much for your articles. I have passed the prince out to Shah Sab. He has gone to Karachi for a few days. I will arrange an appointment with the Sheikh in Karachi for you on Tuesday or Wednesday. Please give the Sheikh my regard. Bashir. Sheikh Saab is expecting you at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, and hopefully you will get at least a half hour with him. Looking forward to hearing from you, Bashir.
How's it going?
I found the email setting up Danny's meeting with Gilani. His contact is Imtiaz Siddiq, 01300.
Yeah.
344.
Yeah.
6543. Shikma, yeah. There's another number of them. Brother's mobile.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, where was it? No, this line is disconnected as well. It's not working.
Both women pore over the computer.
That email address, no badmashi?
Mm. In Urdu, it means like no wrongdoing.
It's a weird email address.
Well, the brother's number's bullshit and the Siddiqui's number's bullshit. It's bullshit.
Marianne tries Danny again on her mobile. She drops the phone onto the desk despairingly. She types into Google the name Sheikh Gilani.
Yeah.
The bearded cleric's picture.
Ramat al-Fugra. Fugra?
Fugra, who cares?
Community of the impoverished. Their aim is to purify Islam through violence. The unsolved assassination, 17 firebombing cases between 1979 and 1990.
Possible link to Richard Reed, the shoe bomber.
They are suspected to have connection to terrorists who bombed World Trade Center in 1993.
Injured people being helped away.
I didn't know Gilani was that serious.
No, Sheikh Gilani is a peaceful man. He's always upset when people die.
So he was upset that the World Trade Centers were bombed?
Yes, because many of his followers are American. Do you know who's behind the attack on the World Trade Center?
Who?
The Jews.
Really?
Mossad are the only ones who could have organized such an event. Do you know that 4,000 Jews who normally worked in the towers didn't turn up that day? What are you? A Christian?
No, Jewish.
In a flashback, Marianne holds her head in her hands as she sits with Danny. In the present time again, Asfar sleeps on the sofa. A guard stands vigilantly outside the house. Marianne makes a call.
The American Consulate, Corporal Bailey speaking. How can I help you?
Hello, my name is Marianne Pearl, and I'm calling because my husband is missing. He's a journalist. And he was,
Ma'am, I'm afraid the consulate is closed at the moment. If you can call back in the morning and ask for Randall Bennett, he's in bag security. He gets in pretty early, okay?
Hi, can I speak to John Bussey, please?
John Bussey?
Hi, John. This is Asra.
Hey, Asra. How are you? How's the book?
Yeah, it's going really well. John, listen, I'm with Marianne Pearl in Karachi, and Danny went for an interview earlier on today, and he hasn't come back yet.
Oh, okay. Who's he interviewing?
Marianne calls Danny's mother.
Hello?
Ruth, it's Marianne.
Marianne? You there? It's Marianne. Is everything all right?
Danny had an interview and he's not back. He didn't come home last night.
Marianne, this is Yehuda. Who was he interviewing?
A religious leader. His name was Sheikh Jilani.
Does anyone there know that he's Jewish?
No, I don't think so.
Marianne? Just let us know as soon as you hear anything, okay?
Okay. Boris.
Marianne pictures Danny leaving in his taxi.
Sorry, I'm so late. I'll call you, okay?
She shuts her eyes and rubs her face. She looks shattered. Outside, four loud speakers on a tall building. Across the city, people are called to prayer. Gilbert sweeps the courtyard at Asra's house while the guard sits holding a rifle. Marianne makes a phone call from the balcony.
Hello, I'm calling for Randall Bennett.
Randall Bennett speaking.
Hello, my name is Marianne Pearl, and my husband is Daniel Pearl. He's a journalist for the Wall Street Journal.
I know your husband.
You do?
Yeah, I met him yesterday.
Daniel?
Daniel Pearl, yeah.
Randall Bennett, Diplomatic Security Service. How are you?
I want to ask your advice about something, if you don't mind. I'm supposed to be meeting later with Sheikh Jilani.
Okay.
And I want to get a sense from you whether you think that that's a good idea.
Who arranged that meeting for you?
My fixer in Islamabad.
Uh-huh. Is he going to be there?
No. I mean, I left him in Islamabad.
Uh-huh.
Now Marianne calls the fixer, Masood.
Hello?
Masood, it's Marianne.
Hi, Marianne. Is everything okay?
Yeah, listen, Danny did not come home last night.
What do you mean he didn't come home last night?
I need a number for Bashir.
I have the number to the contact, but I don't have the number to Bashir.
Who is your contact?
His name is Arif. He met him in Rawalpindi.
Flashback.
Assalamu
alaikum.
Arif shakes hands with Danny as he joins him and Masood in a taxi. Arif tells the driver, please stop near the Hotel Akbar International.
Assalamu alaikum.
One standby.
Danny watches as Arif talks to a man dining alone. He brings him over.
Hello. Hi, Danny.
Hello.
Masood. What's your name?
Bashir.
Hello, Bashir. Nice to meet you.
In a bedroom.
You know, Sheikh Jilani is a direct descendant of the Prophet. He's a peer. Peer Sanjte? A holy man.
The holy man.
Most of the journalists who come here, they come with only one story they want to write, and that is they want to write about terrorism. Is that what you want?
Honestly, I don't. I can't tell you that until I meet him. I don't know that until I meet him.
Sheikh Jilani does not want to meet journalists.
I understand. Listen, I have a number of articles. If you'd like to see them,
yes,
I'd be happy to show them to you.
Yes.
Is there a way for me to get in touch with you? My email address is on there.
Bashir, is he jihadi?
It's possible. I'm not sure.
Is he connected to Al Qaeda?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure at all.
I'll call Arif and I'll call you straight back.
This is serious, actually.
Yeah, you call me straight back.
Policemen and soldiers arrive at Asra's house. She watches from a window.
Give me Danny's computer.
She hides Danny's laptop in a drawer. A policeman says in Urdu, look through all the papers in here and put them over there. Another asks Asra, is this your house? She replies, yes, it's my house. He asks for her name and ID. She says she has her passport and she's from India. Another policeman checks through one of Danny's notebooks while Marianne watches.
There's some codes.
It's your shorthand. He's a journalist.
Do you have a photograph of your husband?
There's a bag with a circle, a polka dot.
The policeman instructs his officers, look under the bed. Marianne hands over photographs of Danny from her handbag. An officer says, give those pictures to me. Marianne takes a phone call.
Yeah.
Hi, Mariam, this is Masood.
I was calling Arif,
but his mobile is switched off.
Get down here, okay?
I'm a bit afraid of police. Can you please protect me from them?
Get down here, okay?
Okay, fine.
Is he coming?
The housekeeper's little girl runs through. Marianne steps over to one of the plainclothes policemen.
Hello.
Yes, I'm Marianne. Who are you?
Javed Habib. I'm SSP CID. Is Dost MI.
Hello.
Hello. What is that? Huh?
Military intelligence. I am chief of CID, unit in charge of counter-terrorism.
Counter-terrorism?
Randall Bennett is called here.
Randall Bennett?
Mm-hmm.
Can you help me to understand what is this?
The most important thing for us is to find your husband.
His colleagues are studying paperwork. The housekeeper leads her little girl out of the room.
Yeah. Asra and I are your best ally. Right? We are both journalists. And we should work together.
I would not like to have it any other way, Mrs. Ferrer. I need your support. I need your help.
We have Danny's computer.
Okay. Can I see it?
I'll go and get it.
Who took him to the restaurant?
Now they ask Hubert, did you get the taxi for Daniel Pearl? He replies, yes, sir. He's asked, where did you get the taxi from? Sir, from Two Swords, he says. Next, the Two Swords taxi rank. Police quiz the waiting drivers. One is told to get out of his yellow cab and is then asked his name. The officer strolls over to a young driver who says, hello, son, and asks his name too. Back at the house.
What's that?
Can you translate?
We'll find you, Danny. You must take care of yourself and the baby.
Marianne smiles and looks away from the CID chief called Captain. Next, the village restaurant. Police interview the staff. One says, there was no foreigner here yesterday. Another is asked, yesterday evening, did you see a foreigner here? No, sir, is the reply. A TV news report.
The Al-Qaeda suspects, seen on their arrival in Cuba earlier this month, are the subject of renewed concern over how the United States is treating its detainees.
The fixer, Masood, sleeps as he travels on a passenger jet. In her bedroom, Marianne kneels in prayer, holding rosary beads. She closes her eyes and pictures Danny. A smile flickers on her lips as she visualizes him, glancing at her through his specs with his gentle blue eyes over the top of a newspaper he's reading. She lies in bed and once more tries his mobile. A caption says, January the 25th, Masood sits on a balcony with Marianne and Asra.
I'm very sorry about Danny. Have you heard any news?
No. Can you tell us what you know?
Danny wanted to meet Gilani.
Mm.
We went with Arif and we spoke with Bashir.
Who's Arif?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? How did you meet him?
I got his number from a friend of mine.
Okay, so who's the friend?
I can't tell you.
You can't tell us? Why is that? Is that because they paid you for Danny? I mean, like, how much did they pay you for Danny?
I was doing my job helping Danny.
I don't think you understand how serious this is, huh? We need that name to find Danny. Danny is missing. You may be able to help me find him. Okay? I need the name.
I promised him. Now, if I give his name...
Do you understand? Do you understand that maybe you can make the difference of helping Danny or nobody finds him? Maybe nobody finds him because you won't give the fucking name.
The Jang newspaper office, Islamabad. A guy in his 20s answers his phone.
Yeah, hello?
Hello, Paracha. Masood Bol Rao.
Hi.
A caption says, hello, Paracha, this is Masood.
You give them my name?
Hello? Yeah, can you tell me anything that you know about Arif?
I met Arif at Harkatul Mujahideen. He's just a jihadi.
But what's his full name?
I don't know. I don't know anything about him personally. A few weeks ago, they were having this organization legal, but now they've all gone underground.
Okay, look, I don't need a political speech. Can you just give me some information?
He hangs up on Tasra with a worried look. Police interview taxi drivers again. They find Danny's driver. He tells a policeman he had short hair, skinny, and was wearing glasses. The taxi driver is bundled into the back of a police van. At Asra's house, Captain interviews Masood.
I told Danny not to contact Bashir directly.
Can you describe Bashir for us?
I can try.
At the police station, men are being quizzed. Nearby, the bearded taxi driver sits looking anxious. At Asra's house, the furniture is being moved around by a forensic team. A man and a woman arrive and talk to Marianne in French. The man holds a carrier bag. A caption says, we brought you something. It's the best we could find in Karachi. Outside, a bearded man wearing shades gets from a 4x4 holding a box file. Others follow. He walks past police guards and greets Marianne.
I'm Randall Bennett.
It's nice to meet you at last.
Nice to meet you.
This is Philippe Scarron.
Hello.
Véronique Laron from the French.
Bonjour.
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 And from the FBI, we have Maureen.
Yeah, Mrs. Pro, we're going to need to look at Daniel's computer. These gentlemen need to copy the hard drive.
As Deputy CID Chief Dorst answers the phone, the French embassy man tells Marianne, if you need anything, don't hesitate. The woman says, goodbye, Marianne. Be brave.
I haven't been introduced to this gentleman here.
Javed Habib, Chief of CID.
He's leading the investigation on the Pakistani side.
Ah, interesting. Thank you.
Is it black?
Excuse me.
We have been discussing how important it is that everybody shares information.
Of course.
Bennett?
Yes.
Kind of a private call. You think you can clear the room?
All right,
come on, gentlemen. Today, let's go. Let's move it out. Thank you, gentlemen.
This is for you. It's as much as I get together in 24 hours. It's a lot about Jelani and some other people that are beginning to appear.
Why have we not heard from the kidnappers?
Well, they're going to want to get Danny to a safe place before they make contact. Mm-hmm. And we've got the police doing everything they can to make it difficult. I want you to know that they consider Danny a high-value hostage and they'll want to keep him alive.
Marianne looks uneasily away from Randall Bennett. Now Asra is drawing up an information chart on a whiteboard. Danny's name is in the middle. There are arrows and links to all the other names and information they know.
Austin.
Sitting up in bed, Marianne absently thumbs through a book. She stares away from the book, lost in her own thoughts, and then discards it.
So now we have one piece of news. Finally, we have found the taxi driver.
What did he say?
He took Danny to the village restaurant for 7. Danny received a phone call, and then he told the taxi driver he could go.
I'm going to let you go, okay? Thank you.
In a flashback, Danny pays the driver and lingers outside the restaurant.
Yeah, but do we believe that story?
Waiters at the restaurant corroborate his story.
Okay, right.
And no luck so far with Jelani.
Or Bashir or Siddiqui?
No.
And what about Masood? What's happening with him?
He's here. We are sending him back to Islamabad tonight. He has to look for Arif. He's here with his brother-in-law, who's a journalist.
He's a journalist. He's here.
He works for Takbir, a jihadi newspaper, very anti-US.
What? Where is he?
He's outside.
Marianne gets to her feet and steps outside.
What is this? Who are these people? Why you bring them to my house, huh?
You have
Why
to
is
help
there
me.
A journalist
this
in
guy
my
is,
home?
This guy is torturing me. He's a torturer. He's going to go with me to Islamabad.
What is that?
Help me. This is not true. It's not true at all.
You need to find Arif and you need to find Bashir.
Okay.
And don't bring people to my house that don't like American. Danny's American.
Okay.
Don't write shit.
The caption translates, come on, get them in the car. Deputy Dorst warns another officer, make sure nothing goes wrong. Nighttime. In the house, Captain asks Shibir, how long have you been here? The servant replies, 1 year, sir. How many children do you have? Sir, only one child. Only one? Yes, says Shibir. Now an ultrasound picture of Marianne's moving baby. She lies in her bath, stroking her pregnant bump. She listens to Asra arguing with boyfriend Asfar. The caption translates, the ISI came to my parents and asked, where did this girl come from? From India. I know that, but... Next, the two friends, Astra and Mary Ann, sit on a bed together.
You won't come back. His family will never let him come back. Some intelligence guys went over to his house. Said I was some kind of an Indian spy. And then they'd make a big scandal for his family. He's afraid of his family.
Alone now, Astra tries to sleep. In her bed, Marianne fiddles with her phone with sadness etched on her face. She puts the phone to one side. In the sunshine of a new dawn, two cyclists pedal along a wide road, each with a pillion passenger. With shopping bags draped over his handlebars, Shibir also cycles. Outside Asra's house, a linesman works from a raised platform on a truck. An armed policeman says, connect those lines. A bespectacled Westerner arrives by car. A caption says, Steve Levine, Central Asia correspondent, Wall Street Journal. He greets the police guards and rings the bell. He and Marianne embrace.
Marianne.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm all right.
Any news?
No.
No.
How was the honeymoon?
Ah, it was good.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I brought loads of stuff. Computer, printer, phones.
Bye.
Outside, Asra asks the technicians how many lines they are providing. She's told 6 lines, but they have to cut off the neighbor's phones to do it. Inside.
Son, this is Steve.
Ah, Kalo Chale.
Tika.
You speak Urdu?
Steve and Danny work together in Islamabad.
Okay, you knew Mr. Pearl?
So, they still need to find Arif, the go-between, Bashir in Rawalpindi, Imtiaz Siddiqui here in Karachi, and Jilani, wherever he is.
And Danny.
And Danny.
Next, guards open the gates for a car containing Captain and Dorst. The guards are told, check everybody's ID before you let them through. The housekeeper mops the hallway. Her daughter paddles barefoot on the wet floor. The sitting room has become an operation center.
What, like an arranged marriage?
It is, 100%.
Have you seen this article from The Independent?
What's that?
The Journal's bureau in London sent it through.
It's about a British-Pakistani Omar Saeed Sheikh who claims that he wired $100,000 to Muhammad Atta just before 9/11.
How is that connected, Lenny?
Well, he's based in Rawalpindi, and he specializes in kidnapping Westerners. Yeah.
Do you know him?
You know him only by reputation.
Hello?
It's Jamasi.
Let me talk to Marianne, please.
You still can, ma'am?
Hello.
Hey, Marianne. It's John.
Hello.
How are you?
I need you to come here.
I'm thinking maybe the best thing for me to do is to go to Islamabad first.
No, no, to Karachi.
To make the diplomatic rounds with us.
Okay. No, that makes sense to me.
Soon, yeah?
Yeah, very soon. Very, very soon.
All right.
I pretty much can write him off.
Captain, can I talk to you?
Marianne and Captain step into another room.
Then he was not a religious man, but he's Jewish by birth.
Okay. Who else was this?
He didn't advertise it then, but he would never deny if somebody asked him.
Okay. But don't tell anybody.
Nighttime again. Marianne stares at a computer screen. Through the French windows, a police guard is seen patrolling. Daylight, and a caption says January the 27th. Dorst arrives at the house and slams down a newspaper.
What does it say?
It says that Danny is suspected of being a Mossad agent and of having relation with India's intelligence agency.
Give it to me.
Who was that I gave that picture to?
Military intelligence.
They think he's Mossad, they're going to kill him. What is everybody doing? What the fuck is everybody doing?
Marianne steps angrily onto the terrace where giant ferns grow. She takes deep breaths of frustration. She turns and sees that the housekeeper's little girl is sitting on the ground watching her with big puzzled brown eyes. The girl is playing with 2 small metal bowls and a spoon. Marianne tries to contain her anguish. She feels her bump and forces herself to smile at the child, who innocently places one of the metal bowls over an ear.
Very silly. Hello? Yeah, I got it.
To where the address.
Okay, yeah, I got it, thanks. There's an email from the kidnappers. You have a key. The National Movement for the Restoration of Pakistan's Sovereignty has captured CIA officer Daniel Pearl, who has been posing as a journalist of the Wall Street Journal. Unfortunately, he is at present being kept in very inhuman circumstances, quite similar, in fact, to the way that Pakistanis and nationals of other sovereign countries are being kept in Cuba by the American army. If the Americans keep our countrymen in better conditions, we will better the conditions of Mr. Pearl and all other Americans that we capture. There's more...
Jane claims he's Mossad, and now they're claiming he's CIA.
These things, they do to shock you.
They are asking for the release of jet plane.
Randall Bennett and FBI officers drive to the house.
Hello, Captain.
Randall.
I need the original email so we can see the header.
This is a copy. The original was sent to the Washington Post.
I need the original.
Here are the photographs.
This is all of them right here?
Okay.
Is this the only document that came?
This is the IP.
When did you get this?
Half an hour ago.
Photographs
of Danny in chains and then holding up a copy of a newspaper.
Can we get someone to figure out what kind of camera this was?
Too, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't sent to the journal.
Is Danny's clothes? No.
Can you print this out for me, please?
This photo doesn't look real. I think that's a doctored photo. I don't think this is Danny. Look at this. You compare the dimensions here with the dimensions here.
That's Danny. Let's send it off to the lab anyway. Do what you wish.
Josh, can you get on this right away? We're going to have to take this to Washington.
Hello.
Marianne.
It's his mother. It's Danny's mother. Hello.
Have you seen them? The photos of Danny?
Yes.
It's good news, Marianne.
Yes.
It means
yes.
It's, Danny is alive.
Yes, of course he's alive. Yes.
The people here,
they don't think it's real.
They don't think they're really Danny.
Of course they are. I recognize his hands.
Listen, they're going to release him, okay? I mean, no one would ever want to hurt Danny.
They would.
Marianne holds up one of the photos.
I don't think so. You see that? He's smiling. He has a gun to his head. And he's smiling. And he's telling me he's okay.
Yeah.
He says fuck you to them.
There's an embarrassed unease. Danny's parents' home.
She'll be fine. She'll be fine.
A convoy of vehicles. Marianne sits in one of them with John Bauman, the U.S. Consul General.
I appreciate how difficult this meeting is going to be for you, Mrs. Pearl.
We need the minister to authorize a national force to look for Danny. Just because he was taken in Karachi doesn't mean he's still here.
News crews are waiting when they arrive at the offices of the Pakistan Interior Minister.
Minister, good to meet you. This is Marianne Pearl.
How do you do?
Thank you for meeting with us.
Mrs. Pearl. Let me tell you something. There were 3,000 journalists in Pakistan during the war in Afghanistan. Not one of them got into trouble.
Well, Danny and I were two of those journalists, so I'm sorry, I don't understand your point.
Why did your husband have to meet with these people?
He's a journalist.
I don't think this is the business of a journalist.
Forgive me for correcting you, but it is absolutely the business of a journalist.
Mrs. Pearl.
Yes.
We do have information that the Indian intelligence services are behind this kidnapping.
You really believe that? I don't see
They are trying to embarrass Pakistan by blaming Islamic extremists or the ISI for the disappearance of an American journalist. Don't you see it? I think we must conclude at this point. Uh-huh. Mr. Bauman, I am slightly busy and I do have some prior engagements.
Thank you.
Mr. Bauman.
Mrs. Pearl.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bauman.
The minister shakes their hands as he ends the meeting. Next, Masood arrives with Detective Noor at the Hotel Akbar International. The officer quizzes the staff, showing a photograph of Bashir. As he searches the hotel register, a man says, "Here is his number." Next, in a car outside, Masood asks, "How long do we have to stay here?" The reply is, "Until we find him." Marianne and the team get a visit from the head of the Citizen Police Liaison Committee, Kalim Yusuf.
I'm sorry I was unable to come sooner. I've been away. But I have here a list of all the calls that Danny made from the 19th.
Didn't you meet with Danny the day that he was kidnapped?
That's right. Danny told me he was meeting with Jilani. In fact, while he was with me, he received two phone calls.
Right. Right, I'll be there.
We work with telephone numbers. We start with Danny's number and Arif's, Imtiaz Siddiqui's and Bashir's. From these numbers, we find their contacts. And then we obtain the numbers that they called and so on until we find the kidnappers. This is our business. And let me assure you, we know what we're doing.
We're sourcing the IP from Bashir's email, right?
That's what they're trying to do.
And no luck so far?
No.
The FBI team sit at computers. So too does Randall Bennett and the team who are tracing Danny's phone calls. Marianne lies on her bed in semi-darkness with her eyes open and weary. She pictures in her mind the last time she saw Danny as he was driven away in a taxi. Next, a TV news report.
We're coming to you from the Los Angeles home of Daniel Pearl, the journalist who's been kidnapped in Pakistan. A group calling itself the National Movement for the Restoration of Pakistani Sovereignty is claiming responsibility for the kidnapping and says it's hoping for better treatment of U.S. prisoners held in Cuba.
Foreign editor John Bussey is being driven through a crowded street.
Excuse me, sorry. You sure this is the right way?
Yes, sir.
Do you have a map?
He arrives at Asra's house to find it besieged by news crews and outside broadcast units. As his car slows, reporters and photographers transfer their attention to him. Police open the gates. He gets out and waves to the media, who are held back by the gates. He goes inside.
The scene outside the house is out of control. We have to respond.
I think you should handle most of it, sir.
Great. We've gotten hundreds and hundreds of requests. You have an authority that nobody else has to say who Danny is. And they've already said that he's Mossad. They've already said he's CIA. By not responding, we're tacitly allowing these things to go unchallenged. We also have been talking to Colin Powell. Colin Powell has been talking to President Musharraf.
Asking him to do what?
We also got a... We've also issued a statement saying that Danny did not work for the government, that Danny did not work for the CIA. The CIA has then agreed to issue a statement confirming that.
They're going to confirm that publicly?
Yeah.
The CIA?
Yeah. You know, we're doing everything we possibly can do to make sure that Danny is safe.
Two police vehicles. Inside the lead vehicle, Detective Noor is on his mobile. Okay, we're on our way, he says. He asks Masood, where's the coast station for Muzaffar Alabad? Masood asks if Arif is going there from Pulwadi bus station. Now a caption says, Pulwadi bus station. The police pour out with Masood in tow to check the passengers on waiting buses. Masood is asked, is Arif here? With no sighting at the bus station, police comb a nearby shanty town where people in traditional robes mill around buildings of tin, straw and canvas, where chickens roam free. Back at the house, Kalim Yusof updates the team.
73 numbers have now been recognized as possible suspects. Our analysis is beginning to yield results. One of the numbers that Bashir called is a landline in Lahore.
That landline belongs to a Sony TV dealer.
A police raid.
And this Sony TV dealer was frequently calling another man in Karachi.
In another police raid, a bearded man struggles angrily as police bundle him into the back of a van.
And this person was frequently calling another man in Punjab.
A pickup truck full of policemen arrives in a rundown area of Punjab, where water flows in the street and locals sit outside. Plain-clothed officers ask, where is Hashim's house? They knock on a door. It's opened by a man. Where is Hashim, he's asked. We want to search the house. At Asra's house, captain continues the briefing.
Now, the important thing is, Hashim also goes by the name of Arif.
Arif.
Ah, that's great.
Yeah.
We have a photograph of Arif.
You found Arif, right?
He shows the photo.
But his family claims he died in Afghanistan.
What? He told Danny he was going to Kashmir.
Exactly.
Was there a body?
No, there's no body. We do not believe he's necessarily dead. His group has a lot of fighters in Kashmir. We think he may have gone to Muzaffarabad.
Asra sticks the photo to the whiteboard. Later, she shares Marianne's bed. Her phone wakes both of them.
Hello?
Hey, Asra, it's John Bussey. I didn't want to give you guys a heads up. We got another email from the kidnappers.
Both women get up and sit at the big table in what has become the operations room. Marianne reads the email from the kidnappers. It suggests that instead of working for the CIA, Danny was working for the Israeli security services. Marianne stares, looking drained. There are two photographs of Danny with his glasses removed. His wrists are chained. Marianne takes a bath and stares ahead absently.
I have a message. Yes, I have a message. I have three different points I want to talk about.
Marianne, how's going in there?
Good. I'm coming.
It's the next evening now. Bussy calls to pick up Marianne.
Okay, you look great.
Good. Okay. Oh, no, one moment.
Marianne walks back to wrap a shawl over her shoulders.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's great. I'll do it. Yeah. Azra, come on.
Yeah.
We should go.
Azra follows Marianne and Bussy to a small unmarked police car parked outside.
Okay, let's go.
That's perfect.
Jesus Christ.
Come on, you guys, let's go. Come on.
Bussy gets out and starts to push.
Watch your toes, John.
Yeah, we'll give it a howl. You get in.
Shabbos.
Now Shabir and policemen push to get the car started. Then they run through a gauntlet of newspeople. With headlights blazing, the small car weaves its way through the congested traffic.
You know, emphasize the baby, emphasize the fact that you and Danny are both journalists working here, and,
Bussy, she's fine. Just relax.
Marianne gives a television interview to CNN.
Mrs. Pearl, the group holding your husband have given a 24-hour deadline for the United States to meet their demands, or else they say that they'll kill your husband, Daniel. Do you have a message to that group?
Yeah, I have a message. Three different points I want to talk about. The first one is that I want to remind them that my husband and I are both journalists. We are two people who met and fell in love because we have the same ideal. He's someone who... I never saw him say a lie. In his journalism, I've never seen anyone so honest.
And how are you coping with this?
I haven't slept for 6 days, if that's what you're asking. But I have hope. You know, I'm not desperate because I believe that if I stop trying to create this dialogue, then I stop believing in everything else. And I can't do that. I'm pregnant.
And if you could say one thing to your husband now, what would you tell him?
I love you.
The floor manager takes off her earphones.
Yep.
Okay.
Cut there. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you. Great. How are you? I like the fact that you held yourself together.
You wouldn't know her husband's been kidnapped for 6 days.
Bussy and Azra escort Marianne out, looking proud of her. She's quiet and thoughtful on the car journey home. Later, Bussy and Steve Levine sit with coffee in the lounge of their hotel.
I have to figure out a way to get Marianne to eat more. I think it's important for her, for her health. You know what I mean? She's a pregnant woman. She's got to feed this baby.
Yeah, just so you know, I'm not a very good cook.
You know, maybe it's a matter of if we're all eating together.
Asra's house, a caption says January the 31st.
You cannot fool us and find us where in sight. Seas, oceans, hills, graveyards, everywhere. This cycle will continue and no American journalist could enter Pakistan.
With respect to Mr. Pearl, we're deeply concerned about his safety and our hearts go out to his family, and I know that the colleagues at the Wall Street Journal are deeply concerned. We're doing everything we can to try to locate him and rescue him. I have spoken to President Musharraf in Pakistan about the situation, and I know that he is doing everything he can. The demands that the kidnappers have placed are not demands that we can meet or deal with. We're getting into a negotiation about the detainees at Guantanamo are being treated humanely.
The team watch Colin Powell on TV. Marianne says silent prayers at the shrine in her room. Later, Randall sits by her as she lies on her bed.
Don't you collapse now. Everybody else can collapse, but not you. Don't you collapse. Pakistani authorities are very... Well, they're very embarrassed by this, and they are not going to go easy on the bad guys, I'll tell you that right now. I mean, the methods they use over here, these guys are going to tell us what we want to know. I'd like a front row seat when they hang them up by their feet and beat them with sticks.
Bussy leaves the house holding his briefcase. He extends his hand to the somewhat surprised police guard.
All right, good night. And we'll see you stay all night, yeah? You stay, yeah, all night?
Bussy gets into a car with Steve. Another guard opens the gates as they reverse out. In her bed, Marianne taps Danny's numbers into her cell phone. This time she sends a text. It says, I love you. Another day, loudspeakers on a tower summon people to morning prayer. White buildings with mainly flat roofs stretch into the distance under a grey sky. A white car pulls through the lines of news teams already gathered outside the house. In the courtyard, the housekeeper dresses her little girl. Shabir greets the new arrival in the white car.
Salam.
Put here, please.
Thank you.
So we have a chef.
Yes. John got him from Mr. Bauman. He normally works at the U.S. consulate.
The chef starts work. The team read papers.
Uh-oh, baffling questions about Indian lady and Pearl case. That is the perfect word for Azra. The security agencies are probing several baffling questions pertaining to the Indian Muslim lady, Azra Q. Nomani.
Is there a photo of Nita?
Ms. Nomani's staying at a house in Karachi that the latter got on a monthly rental of 40,000 rupees.
They're printing how much rent I'm
paying? How did they do that?
40,000 rupees.
Yeah.
As her address in India with her phone number, 912236 7.
That's my address? How can they get that kind of information?
Well, it's obvious. Security agencies, who else? That's their job. They're doing their job.
You better change your phone number.
They will. It's a Pakistan and India thing.
That evening, it pours with rain. Police shelter in a truck outside. Captain and Marianne watch the torrent from the doorstep. Captain asks Shabir what he thinks of it.
He's saying, God is raining. God is pulling down the rain.
Later, the team of nine sit around the dinner table as the new chef delivers roast turkey served on a bed of rice and vegetables.
Wow.
I believe you're good with a knife.
The American consul really knows how to survive in Pakistan.
Let's enjoy our food.
This is a Cote d'Aron, 1929 Cote d'Aron.
Wow, vinegar.
They all allow themselves to smile. It's a slow drive back to their hotel for Steve and Bussy. It stopped raining now, but the roads are flooded from the earlier downpour. The water reflects a shimmering white light from the tall street lamps. At the entrance to the underground car park at the Sheraton Hotel, a security man checks the cars going in. Next, Steve and Bussy are in the hotel lounge.
Steve's a good name. Because you got Steven, you got Steve. Jonathan, John, Johnny. Formal nicknames.
I'd be like,
you know what's pretty?
Allison.
Allie, Allison, Al, for instance.
Teresa.
You know, it's really old-fashioned.
Mother Teresa.
No?
Yeah.
That's true. Hey, Captain, what's up? What is it?
Danny's body has been found. He's in the morgue. Those is already been collected.
Okay, thank you.
What?
You gotta get over there.
Gotta get the guy here before we go.
Fuck. Where's the guy? Where's the waiter guy?
John, fuck the
Steve.
Walk up, what are you fucking talking about?
Fuck.
What did he say? What did Captain say?
He said they've got the body in the morgue.
I come to you with a tragic development in the case of Daniel Pearl, the Wall Street Journal reporter who's been missing for 10 days. According to Karachi police, we can confirm now that he is dead. His body was found dumped outside of a car in downtown Karachi. He had several bullet wounds.
They arrive at the mortuary. Captain and Randall are already there. Randall stares down as a white sheet is removed from a bloodied face.
Okay, you open the mouth. Shukriya. It's not Danny.
What do you mean it's not Danny?
Well, he's got braces in his mouth.
That's not fucking Danny.
What?
It's not fucking Danny.
He's got braces in his mouth.
Outside, Bussy makes a call.
Whoa. So wait, I'm sorry. Are you doubting the fact that I saw this? Are you actually asking me to get you a second source?
Hello? Yeah, it's not fucking Danny. No, it's a fucking Iranian student, for God's sakes.
It is not Danny.
Are you coming over?
Yeah.
I just wanted to get you, that way you should know.
All right, okay.
I can't believe that they just announced it without any confirmation.
Yeah, in the middle of Super Bowl Sunday.
I can't imagine who those sources were.
Everyone's calling the Journal for a quote.
It's not Danny, you know that.
I know. Yeah? I've been talking to the Journal.
Listen, just, be strong, huh? I know. We will be.
Marianne finishes her call to Danny's mother. Food is being served on a passenger jet as it flies through the nighttime sky. A fat, unhappy-looking man with a long beard sits next to Detective Noor. A caption says, Sheikh Jalani. Next, Noor sits in the back of a car with Jalani on the way to police HQ, where Captain interviews him.
This gentleman, Daniel Pearl, you keep on mentioning again and again.
I'm not asking you about his whereabouts. I just want to
know. I've told you earlier, I've never heard of this name before.
I'm saying, what's your opinion about his articles?
I've never read his articles. What are you trying to get at?
Now, we have the mails, which says, I spoke to Sheikh's secretary yesterday, and he told me that Sheikh Saab has read your articles and that you are welcome to meet him. You gave the appointment. You read his articles. It says Bashir wrote to Daniel.
Bashir wrote to Daniel Pearl. Why don't you ask Bashir? Why don't you ask him?
Now Captain and his deputy Dorst arrive by car at Astra's house.
Marianne?
I'll get it.
We have caught Jalani. He was in Muzaffarabad, but he is here now.
What did he say?
He's not involved.
Wait. I thought Jalani was the guy.
It was just a bait. He was used as a bait.
So there's no Jalani involved?
No. We go back to Arif, we go back to Sadiq and Bashir.
I don't see this as a negative thing, I have to say.
This is a setup. I mean, if Jalani has nothing to do with this, these letters are bogus.
It's worse than that. It means that they've been planning something for weeks. And for weeks, he thinks he's meeting with Jalani, and there is no Jalani.
Right.
And whoever these people are, they're thinking about doing this for weeks.
Marianne glances at the whiteboard full of names.
It is disappointing.
We're just taking away one piece. I don't see it as a negative thing. It's a dead end. I think it's quite contrary.
In a wide alleyway flanked by tall tenement blocks, technicians sift through a bundle of electronic cables. Dorst gives a briefing.
Well, now the good news is Zafir and Farooq have traced one of the emails.
Another alleyway.
It was sent from a server in Nomad City Apartments.
There's a team of people who are searching for the computer that was using the server when the kidnapper email was sent.
Police comb the area, knocking on doors and taking away every computer they find. One young man looks nervous and licks his dry lips when a detective calls on him. The officer picks up a book and thumbs through it. A caption translates, "What's your name?" Then he asks, "Is this computer yours?" The man says it is and is asked to turn it on. He replies it can't be switched on because the hard disk has crashed. "What happened to the hard disk?" says the detective. "There was a virus on it and it crashed. I took it to repair 2 days ago." The officer asks, "It broke down 2 days ago?" "Yes," he's told. Now the young man, Farhad, is taken to the police station. Captain asks him, "How many computers have you connected in that building?" He replies, "In that building, 20 or more." "20," says Captain. "Yes," says Farhad. "Is this your job?" "Yes, this is what I do." Captain says, "We are looking for Daniel Pearl's photograph." Captain warns him that they have new software that can easily recover files from hard drives. Captain touches Farhad's cheek and says, "Whatever you know, just tell us now. You won't have any difficulties. If the Americans find you, you'll be in big trouble and we won't be able to help you." Captain asks if he did it on his own. Farhad replies, "No, sir. My cousin Suleiman was with me." Captain asks where the cousin lives. Farhad says the cousin lives in Karachi, and Captain asks, "Is he in Karachi now?" Farhad confirms he is. They leave for the car with their informant.
In the morning prayer, everybody will come to also be there to find Danny tonight.
The caption translates, "Quickly, quickly." Police cars drive slowly along a nighttime street, teeming with people. In the back of Captain's car, Farhad says, "This is the place." They stop and watch. Captain, in his shirt sleeves, pops a cigarette between his lips. People, mostly men, of all ages, mingle near a pavement coffee house, some in traditional robes, some casually dressed. "There he is," says Farhad. He points to a man with a thick black beard in a white robe. "That's him," he says. Captain's on his phone. "Yes, he's the one." Two detectives get from a car behind and follow Suleiman to a payphone. He's about to make a call when he sees Come on, move it, he's told. Others stare suspiciously as he puts up a struggle as his frog march to the car. A detective tells the crowds, get out of my way. Suleiman is still struggling as he's marched into a police station. Now he sits in a cell, naked and dripping wet. He tosses back his head with fear in his eyes. Captain and Dorse stride down a corridor to the cell. A uniformed officer salutes them. Captain says to Dorst, give me his phone. He says to Suleiman, tell him what I told you to say. Suleiman takes the mobile in his handcuffed hands and makes the call. He says, it's Suleiman.
Yes, Suleiman. Hello?
Suleiman tells Captain he says he's not there. Captain asks the prisoner if he has the man's cell number. He's told yes. Captain says, then let's try it. Suleiman makes the call. Suleiman speaking. What do you want, he's asked. I need to speak to you. I need to meet you urgently. The other person says, not now. We'll meet up early tomorrow morning and talk, okay?
Hello. Hello, Adil.
Suleiman tells Captain, sir, he's saying we'll speak tomorrow. Captain takes the phone and tells Dorsk, take down this number. Captain talks to the phone company from an office.
Yeah, this is Javed Habib, CID chief. I need some information about the last phone call made on this phone.
Randall strides in.
Which cell tower received the signal on the last phone call?
Using Suleiman's phone, Captain tells the phone company, we don't have any time, you bastard.
Let's go. Yeah, Randall, come along.
As Captain and Dors rush off, Captain invites Randall to join them. They pull up at the phone company's offices.
CID.
They're challenged by security and then again at reception.
Excuse me, sir. Number trace back.
Captain says we need to trace a number. He's told the office is closed and information can't be given right now. He adds, what do you need to do with this number? Captain gives him a warning slap, reminding him that he is the CID chief. He tells him to screw confidentiality. A man has been kidnapped and it would be bad for Pakistan if he were harmed. Back in the car.
Yeah, man. We just have to go a little careful with this one.
Why?
He's a jihadi. He was in Afghanistan. He's a police officer as well.
In my unit.
Oh, God. I love this town.
With armed police backup, they creep through a scruffy apartment block. They pass an open door where somebody is sleeping on a blanket on the stone floor. Carrying AK-47s, the police climb stairs to a higher level. Captain signals for some men to take up positions on an outside walkway. They force their way into an apartment. A voice says, who's there? The order, don't move. They seize a man with a heavy black beard. Put your hands up, he's told. Then take him away. You'll be sorry, the man says. As he's being taken, he shouts, God is great, God is great. Shots are fired at the police. They return fire from the open walkway where washing hangs. Other residents watch, looking bewildered. Next, the man they've captured, Adele, is naked and shackled in an interrogation room where he hangs by his wrists. Captain asks him, where is Daniel Pearl? He replies, I don't know. What do you know? He says, I don't know anything. Captain says, tell me whatever you know. Gritting his teeth, he replies, I don't know anything. Again, what do you know? As he hangs there, Adele is asked again, what do you know? Just tell me, what do you know? What did you do? He says once more, I don't know anything. Nothing, Captain nods to a colleague. Near a stack of lockers, Randall watches grim face. Captain asks, what do you know? Who asked you to email? Who are you working for? The tortured man grimaces in agony. Eventually, he replies, Sheikh Omar.
किसने काम पे रखा था किसने बोला था मिल करने के लिए
With sweat glistening on his face, Captain studies Adele carefully. Then he turns to colleagues. Next, he and Randall are in the lead car of a convoy that pull up at a substantial house in a suburb.
Dost, jagah pe ho? Dost, come in.
I'm here, Captain.
Squatting by his car, Captain points the way for a team of armed officers. They go through a gate and then climb over a wall that has barbed wire at the top. A hand is placed over the face of a sleeping guard at the other side of the wall to silence him. Captain, other policemen, and Randall follow. When the team is in position, Captain gives the signal to burst through the door of the house. The police barge in and rush up the stairs. A caption translates, "Quickly, come on!" A woman in a white robe with a veil over her head is ushered down the stairs. A caption translates, "Check all the rooms, search everything." A man in a white shirt is led by police from one of the rooms. The woman asks, "Who are you people? Is this a way to come into respectable people's homes?" Captain asks her, "Where is Sheikh Omar? You must have a contact number." A young man says, "We don't know anything." As concern grows on Captain's face, he says, "Give me Adele's phone." He rings the number. In a different place, a hand reaches from a bed to the ringing phone.
Hello?
Omar Sheikh?
The man says yes. Captain identifies himself and tells him, "We have all the information. We know everything about you. Farhad, Adele, Suleiman, we have all of them. Check your caller ID. The man looks stunned. He turns off his phone.
He's got the phone.
Randall wipes a hand nervously over his mouth. A policeman carries a computer down the stairs. Randall stares intently at one of the young men held. The caption translates, "Come on, bring them out." Two men are put in the back of a police truck. It's daylight now. There's a briefing at Azra's house.
Adil told us that he met Umar in Afghanistan. Suddenly I realized Bashir was Umar Said Sheikh.
You sure?
Yes.
The FBI found Danny's photos on this guy Farhad's computer, who is the key to Sheikh Omar.
So we've had this article and we just put it away, and it was about Umar Said Sheikh.
I have it here somewhere.
Okay, look, here it is. British-born and educated, a known jihadist, arrested for kidnapping four tourists in India, one American, three British. The four were freed unharmed.
They were freed unarmed?
Yeah.
So this guy's a serious player.
He was arrested in 1994 for this kidnapping and put in an Indian prison until 1999.
And why was he released?
There was a hostage swap. An Indian airplane was hijacked and flown to Afghanistan.
He's Al-Qaeda.
He has connections, yes, we know, he has connections, but...
Close connection, it says, to Al-Qaeda.
We arrested his two cousins. We'll fight kidnappers with kidnappings.
Marianne sticks a photo on the whiteboard and writes, "Omar Said Sheikh," next to it. She circles the name. The road is chock-a-block with buses and cars and people. There's a street market. A beggar crouches low with outstretched palms. Outside a mosque, people pray. Captain is amongst them with a white cap on his bowed head. Shabir prays too on Asra's lawn. His feet are bare. In her room, Marianne kneels in front of her shrine where two candles burn, and she chants. Outside, the media are still gathered. Inside, the cook prepares food and the housekeeper cleans. Marianne now sits at the operations desk in the sitting room. She grips the desk and looks down in discomfort. Bussy turns to her with a look of concern.
Mm. You okay? Mm. Marianne?
Yeah, no, I'm all right.
What's wrong?
I'm all right. You okay?
Mm-hmm.
She rests on the bed while a doctor checks her bump with a stethoscope.
Fetal heart sound and the blood pressure is quite normal. And I will give you some of the medicine. You will feel definitely better. Okay?
Okay. Fine. Thank you.
Making a habit of not urinating when you feel the need increases the risk that your inflamed bladder may irritate the uterus and set off contractions. So don't hold it in.
I'll remember that.
That was in caps.
Don't
hold it in.
Hold it in. Do you want to go... share those notes with Marianne?
I think I should.
Is there anything on breastfeeding?
There's a lot of breastfeeding, but we're not there yet, Steve.
Do you have kids?
No.
Bussy reads from a pregnancy book. In her bedroom, Marianne sits cross-legged on the bed with her laptop. She clicks on Places We Have Been. A page comes up about Bombay. In a flashback, Danny takes her photo.
Come on, look happy. All right, you're a happy girl. Happy girl. Oh, there it is. Now I can tell all my friends that you are happy.
She smiles and looks happy as they ride on a boat. Danny has his arm round her as she looks at the photo.
You can get old and fat and gray and grumpy.
Looking curvy.
But don't lose your smile.
They hold hands and stare lovingly at each other as they glide over the sparkling water. As she continues to cherish the memories, Steve looks glum as he stares at his computer.
Oh, shit.
Marianne has another flashback.
It does smell like a picture.
You're so uncultured.
There's a potential new email from CNN. We had informed the U.S. that if our demands were not met within 24 hours, we would kill Daniel Pearl. Now Mr. Bush could find his body in the graveyards of Karachi. We throw him there.
Marianne remembers Danny staring admiringly at her on a dance floor.
Do we think it's another hoax?
Get all the phones on silent, shall we?
Danny and Marianne dance together.
Let me call Captain.
In Marianne's flashback, she and Danny explore the streets of Bombay. They take a train journey. In the present time, two police cars drive along a wide Karachi street at dawn. One has red lights flashing. The street is almost deserted. A flashback of Danny and Marianne lying in a bed together. Next, a team of police officers at a cemetery in Karachi. Another flashback of Danny and Marianne in bed. Police officers with rifles search the cemetery. The bedroom scene again. Danny and Marianne make love. Police in the cemetery, and then a flashback to Danny waiting outside the village restaurant. Police peer into an old grave where there are rats. Dor strolls thoughtfully among the gravestones. In her white nightdress, Marianne wakes up in her bed and turns to see an empty space where Danny used to sleep. Her head covered by a scarf, the housekeeper washes pans in a bucket in the courtyard. Her young daughter helps. In the kitchen, the cook prepares a crab. Marianne has joined the others at the big desk.
Why Danny?
The journal a few weeks ago handed over to the CIA a computer which had information about Richard Reed and his attempts to blow up the American airline flight.
And then you guys told everyone that you did that.
Marianne, look at this.
Flashback.
And the Wall Street Journal is telling everybody it's cooperating with the CIA. We turned the computer over because we had no choice.
Okay.
It's a matter of national security.
Okay, to an outsider, it could look like the CIA are in bed with the journal.
Just because you...
So what, do you think it's no factor? Just ignore it?
I don't think it's a factor. I don't think Danny was taken because he worked for the Wall Street
Journal.
We don't know.
They know where he works, and they say CIA. It's something.
Let's be honest about it. They call everybody a spy.
Fine.
I mean, if you're an Indian in Pakistan, you must be an Indian spy.
All right, here's what I think. 2 days before Danny was kidnapped, the U.S. asked Pakistan to hand over Omar Sayed Sheikh. Now, Omar was supposed to have sent money to Muhammad Atta prior to 9/11. Now, rumors are that this money came from Lieutenant General Mahmoud Ahmed, who was the head of the ISI. Now, on October 7th, Musharraf dismissed the general. Now, was that because of his involvement?
Asra updates the whiteboard, now crowded with names and links. Later in bed, Marianne takes a call.
Hello?
Marianne?
Yes?
We've got Omar Sayed Sheikh.
A police vehicle speeds along a nighttime street with its lights flashing. A well-presented man in his 30s is ushered into an interview room.
Is Daniel Pearl still alive? I haven't a clue.
He's confident and handsome with a trim black beard.
Do you know where he is?
I wish I could help you.
Who's holding him?
I don't know. That was the whole point of the operation. So that each person knows as little as possible.
Why did you kidnap him?
Why?
Why did you kidnap him?
He was an American.
He was an American, just that?
Yeah.
You think you're a good Muslim?
Alhamdulillah. At least I have the strength to stand for something I believe in. Unlike others in this room.
How old is your son?
He's a baby, Captain. Cute little baby.
You miss him?
Desperately.
You want to see him?
Inshallah. If Allah wills, then it will be so. What about your baby?
We can arrange for that.
Do you want to see your baby grow old?
The caption says 12th of February, Asra's house.
Umar Said Sheikh handed himself in over a week ago, on February the 5th.
It's the same night that the raid was made on his aunt's house.
Where has he been?
He handed himself in to Brigadier Jasha.
He's the Home Secretary of Punjab.
This guy is ex-ISI. He's connected to Omar's family. And he kept Omar's arrest a secret for a week.
Was he being interrogated by the ISI?
We don't know.
Omar is gone for a week? He's gone for a week?
What does he say about Danny?
He doesn't say anything about that yet.
Marianne gets up from the big desk looking downcast.
Marianne?
What?
She walks past an armed police guard into the courtyard. She paces up and down with her hands on her hips. Later, Bussi watches a news bulletin.
British-born militant Sheikh Omar arrived at court heavily guarded, his face covered.
In the packed courtroom.
Do you know where Daniel Pearl is being held?
No, I don't.
Do you know if Daniel Pearl is alive?
Captain watches pensively. Omar switches to Urdu. As far as I know, he is not alive. On February the 5th, I spoke to my brothers on the phone, and I told them to take the patient to the doctors. This was a code to release the hostage.
But it was too late.
At the house.
That's bullshit. They're just liars. They're just psychos and liars.
Marianne paces, looking desperate. The others stare uneasily. Later, Marianne, Steve, Asra and Bussi watch the Pakistani president on TV.
I think if he was not alive, with all the pressure that we are putting, I think we would have got his body from somewhere. And whatever Mr. Umar Sheikh lately has said that he's not alive, I don't believe him. He's been switching sides and switching his statements a number of times. That is what I'm told. He may be trying to take us off the track. So I think really, and maybe I hope and I pray that he's alive.
Taking deep drags on a cigarette, Captain stares from his car window in a nighttime street. He and Dor supervise a raid on some premises. Armed police rush in. Men are taken away and put in the back of a police truck. Police vehicles comb the area. There's another raid. More men are taken away. Now a vehicle with armed police cruises along a street of shops and bazaars. Uniformed police run along the street and upstairs into an apartment block. They frog march more men to their vehicles. Next, the vehicles drive into a police compound. As night turns to day, Dorst is at the wheel of a car. A young man watches from a bridge straddled with communications cables. In a street where the traffic and the people compete for space, there are more arrests, and still more. Bystanders watch the activity with a resigned air of acceptance. Captain Chain smokes. He and Dorst call at a place where the word palace is written on the window. They chat at a reception desk. Next, they and officers carrying rifles run along a walkway. A young man in a red t-shirt is taken away. The armed police crash through a door. And day turns into night again. The police teams led by Captain are still searching and clocking people on the streets. Marianne sits alone at the big desk studying a laptop. Elsewhere, Randall concentrates on his computer in an office, as do FBI agents. Now Randall sleeps with his head on his desk. As Steve talks on his mobile, Marianne somberly reviews on her laptop a past article by Danny.
Peshawar, Pakistan. As a Muslim and an ethnic Pashtun, Fazal Imala has some sympathy for the ruling Taliban in Afghanistan. But on September 11, as he watched television replays of airplanes crashing into the World Trade Center in New York, he knew what to do. Buy Afghanis.
How's Nuri?
Oh, she's good.
What's the due date?
Marianne lies exhausted on her bed, her eyes closed. She visualizes Danny gently tracing patterns on her pregnant belly. Later, Asra lies with her on the bed. The small screen on her mobile says Danny calling.
Hello? Hello? Yes. Please, Danny's when they're speaking Urdu, I don't know. Hello?
She hands Asra the phone. Asra says in Urdu, I would let you speak to her, but she doesn't speak Urdu, okay? Okay?
Whatever you want, whatever you want. Say what is necessary.
No, he just hung up on me.
It's fine, they were making contact. Well, that's good, it's fine.
But they don't say what they want. They don't say what they want.
No, no. They're still toying with us. They know we're getting close.
You think they'll call back?
Well, unless we get to them first.
The caption says the 21st of February. Asra types at the big desk. The little girl plays on the polished floor. Bussy takes a call.
Hello, Sam Bussy. Yeah? Yeah, what?
No, don't bring him over there. No, we'll come over there. We'll come over there. Yeah.
Who was
that? Joe. We gotta go. Hey, Farhan, let's...
Marianne gets from her bed, realizing something is going on. A car drives away.
Where'd they go? They just got a phone call and they had to go off. I'm gonna get my phone.
Asra is already on her phone.
Can't get through to Bussy. Nothing.
Marianne has her phone to her ear.
I tried Bussy and I've tried Steve. I can't get through.
Try Randall.
Okay, it's ringing. Randall's phone is ringing. Hi, Randall. It's Asra. Can you call me as soon as you get this message, please?
The three of them in a car.
Line's not connecting.
Marianne looked increasingly troubled.
Why would they do that?
Hey, Steve.
Hey, John.
How are you?
Yeah, how
are you doing?
Hey, John. So what do you got?
It's a tape. We got it a half an hour ago. John was contacted by a local journalist.
A flashback. A man in shirt sleeves with a moustache walks into the lobby of the Sheraton Hotel holding a package. He approaches the agent sitting on a sofa. He sits beside him.
Hi. Are you John?
Yeah, I am. How are you doing?
They shake hands.
Here is your thing. It's original.
You see it?
Yeah. Be careful.
Thanks.
Guy in striped shirt. You see him?
We're gonna need to x-ray this.
Yeah, come on.
An x-ray machine flashes.
Is there a tape in it?
The package contains a video camera.
This is it.
They all sit looking apprehensive. Captain looks tired and emotional. They watch the video, their faces becoming grimmer by the second. Speed away.
It's Asra. Hello.
Hello? Randall. It's Asra. Where are you?
Hello.
What's going on?
Hang on a second. Hello.
Randall? Yeah.
Hello? Hello?
I just lost her.
No. Where are you going?
Don't know.
Will you call me a car? You want me to call? Where are you going to go?
I don't know. Call me a car.
Marianne looks dazed and washed out. She has a hand on her stomach. Randall and the others race back towards the housing convoy. Captain looks shocked. Bussy has a hand over his mouth. Steve winces as photographers outside the house flash their cameras. Marianne is absently dressing to go out when she hears the vehicles. She steps towards the door. Asra is already outside. The men get from the cars in the compound and look towards Marianne, ashen-faced. Bussy steps forward.
Marianne. I'm sorry.
Danny didn't make it.
She She stands in the doorway, bags visible under tired brown eyes that glisten with tears, her pretty face showing lines. She closes her eyes tightly and her face crumples. Bussy looks down. Marianne turns and heads for her bedroom. She falls to her knees against a chair. Pounds against her bedroom door.
No!
At the other side of the door, Bussy paces. They all share a silence of wretchedness. Marianne walks through to them, her face stained with tears of grief.
How do you...
How do you know?
How do you know? No, because... Because we've, you know, been through this before. They can...
We have a video.
They had a knife, and they used it in a way that leaves no doubt.
But... What does that mean?
Marianne. He was beheaded.
No, what? You watch that? I never want to see it!
Turn off the fucking phone!
Steve fiddles with his wedding ring and strides outside. Marianne sinks down on her bed. Astro wipes her eyes in despair. Outside the village restaurant, a flock of birds take to the air. Marianne takes deep breaths on her bed as she stares up at the ceiling. Her hand goes to her head and she turns over. Three men herd a small flock of sheep over a road. Marianne remains on her bed. Now about a dozen cows look out of place, herded on a demolition site near a busy road. A white European man in his 30s travels by taxi. He passes goats in the road, and then news crews turn their attention on him as he pulls up at Ezra's house. He strides towards the house where Marianne waits to give him a big hug. He speaks to her in French. "I'm here, Marianne," he says.
Je suis là, Marianne. Je suis là.
The day my brother arrived was the day of Eid al-Adha, the day when every Muslim family sacrifices an animal to God, in remembrance of Ibrahim's willingness to sacrifice his son, Ishmael. The meat is then divided into three parts, one for the family, one for the neighbor, and one for the poor.
Marianne, thank you so much for being with us today. You came to Pakistan in peace. You came here seeking the truth with your husband. Now you leave Pakistan as a widow after your husband was brutally murdered. What message do you have for the people of Pakistan?
Danny was killed this month. But also 10 other people were killed by terrorists. And they were all Pakistani. So they are suffering as much as we are, right?
How do you address some Pakistanis who have sympathies for militant groups such as those who killed your husband?
Karachi is in some way the front line of this battle. It is not just a group of extremist Pakistani. It is a vast and international network of terrorists. And wherever there is misery, they find people. And there is misery, you know, in lots of parts of the world.
Well, certainly that may be the case, but have you seen the videotape of what they did to your husband?
A caption translates her reply. Have you no decency, she says.
How do you ask that?
Marion, thank you for being with us.
Okay, I think we're done. Marion, I think it's it. S-A-T-C-H-I.
Sachi, that's okay.
And a middle name, please, Sachi.
Sachi puts his arm around her as they leave. They get into a lift and go down. When the doors open, they're confronted by a pack of reporters. The lift doors close again.
Is there another way out of here?
Yeah, I know another way. Please follow me. Please.
Okay.
This way.
They're led through the kitchens.
Fucking mob.
This way, please.
Here?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Thank you, Cassie. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Sachi says it's crazy they're everywhere. As they drive from the underground car park, reporters run abreast of the car. Now they're on the open road and speed towards Azra's house. A mob of reporters, photographers, and TV crews are outside the house.
Pearl is 38 and graduated from Stanford before beginning a career in journalism. He joined the Wall Street Journal in 1990.
Now from the inside of the house, Marianne watches the news people through the blinds. She turns and continues to carefully pack a suitcase with Danny's clothes. Kneeling on the bed, she zips up the case and positions a strap into place. Another suitcase on the bed is partially packed. Later, she joins the others. Drinks are poured. Food is served.
Looks great.
One more of these?
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm. I think you should start, John.
Come on, John. They all sit at the dining table.
I just want to say something to everybody. I want to thank you for all of your work and all of your effort and your kindness. And I know how much you wanted to find and bring Danny home. You did not fail, you know? Danny's dead, but, you know, the kidnappers, their point is to terrorize people, right? I am not terrorized, and you can't be terrorized. I am very grateful to all of you. Very, very grateful. So thank you. So please, let's eat.
Nobody tucks in. The housekeeper's little girl stares at them with big eyes from the doorway.
It's great. This is terrific.
Now with the tall metal gates at Azra's house open, the team say goodbye to each other. The housekeeper holds her little girl. Marianne kisses the child. The girl leans forward wanting another kiss. Kalim Youssef and Steve shake hands and hug.
Bye. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Marianne says goodbye to Shabir and to Captain. As they leave, they pass the gauntlet of photographers, reporters and broadcast crews. Cars drive along a tree-lined road. Marianne glances out of the window without really seeing. Inside her head, she pictures a middle-aged woman dancing with a smiling man in a bow tie. They and others joyously circle around her and Danny on their wedding day. They dance in happiness under strings of lights that are reflected in the water of an ornate pond with a gushing fountain. Next, she visualizes the face of her delighted mother as she comes down a wide staircase in her wedding dress. The mother says, "Oh, my daughter, you are so beautiful." She takes her mother's arm and they walk outside onto a red carpet. An orchestra is playing and guests wait on the lawn. Danny greets his bride. The caption says, "The aim of Buddhism is to draw out all the strength, courage, wisdom and goodwill."
You
make me happy every time you smile. We're going to create a beautiful world together.
Tu es moi maintenant, et je suis toi.
The wine represents joy.
Danny drinks a glass of red wine in one go.
The breaking of the glass symbolizes the fragility of human joy and also the breaking of innocence.
She and Danny kiss. Now Marianne walks behind a Muslim woman in veils in a French street, carrying her shopping and looking numbed. She enters a flat and places her two carrier bags, one with a baguette poking from the top, onto a kitchen shelf.
They found Danny's body cut into 10 pieces. Nobody told me this. I learned it in an email that was attached by accident to another email sent to me. I decided that before Adam is born, I have to confront everything that happened to Danny.
She shuts her eyes for a moment. Her raven hair shows signs of going grey. The tears come again as she rests on her bed.
He was held in an isolated shack in a compound on the outskirts of Karachi. One day, when he was unshackled to go to the toilet, he tried to escape. They caught him and chained him to the engine of a car. Another time he tried to break loose when he was walking with his captors. Once he shouted to a passerby. Then, one day, probably February 1st, 3 men who spoke Arabic were brought to the compound. Danny argued with one of them. Then they turned on the video.
My name is Daniel Perron. My father is Jewish. My mother is Jewish. I'm Jewish.
Maybe they made him say this, but I know he was undefeated because of the next thing that he says. Something the kidnappers could not have known.
In the town of Bnei Barak in Israel, there's a street called Chaim Perl Street, which is named after my great-grandfather, who was one of the founders of the town.
I force myself to imagine all of it. And when it is over, I know there is nothing that can happen that I won't have the courage to face.
She smiles as she's handed her newborn baby by the black midwife. She stares into the child's blue eyes and rocks him gently.
This film is for Adam.
She gently kisses the boy's tiny hand. A few years later, she walks along a steep street in a French town holding Adam's hand. Caption says, Adam and Marianne live in France. Marianne still works as a journalist. It goes on to say that Captain won an award in April 2003 for outstanding public service. Asra lives in West Virginia. She's an active Muslim feminist and a visiting professor of journalism at Georgetown University. Randall Bennett is now working in Iraq. Adil, Suleiman and Farhad were each sentenced to 25 years in jail. Omar Saeed Sheikh was sentenced to death by hanging. He's appealing against the sentence in Pakistan's Supreme Dal. Kill Daniel. He is currently in U.S. custody in Guantanamo. Ruth and Judia Pearl form the Daniel Pearl Foundation to promote cross-cultural understanding through journalism, music, and dialogue. The end.
Only make do the way that we feel might have to be sacrificed. So in the manner of speaking, I just want to say that just like you, I should find a way to tell you everything by saying.